This is a HeadGum Original.
One, two, three, let's go. While we're on our honeymoon, Andrew and Michael coordinated a piano being moved into our apartment. And these guys basically just shortest version of the story is they did a bad job and almost died doing it.
Jesus.
Like dropping a piano on themselves. And Michael, before he knew it was going to be bungled, took a video of this very cool surprise happening. So he has video of these guys doing
almost
it
dying.
Badly. And the the ringleader is like telling them to move it up the stairs with that exact technique. Just like, okay, everybody got a grip. One, two, three, let's go. You know, it's just like really unhelpful if you're trying to coordinate a simultaneous lift of something that weighs 800 pounds.
She never counted in rhythm. Every time it was different. It'd be like, one, two, three, go. Piano is 900 pounds, my dude.
It was like he was trying to surprise and prank his employees who were also in mortal danger.
Like make it some kind of weird contest.
You might say that you listen to Punch Up the Jam once a week. You might say that we have weekly episodes that come out once every 7 days. You might say that every week you get a little taste of what it feels like to punch up a song, to make a song better.
I'm still with you so far.
You're just getting a little taste every week. Or you could say that this week you're getting the flavor of the week.
Let's punch it.
Punch up the jam, punch it up.
Welcome back to Punch Up the Jam. I'm Andrew Gregory.
And I'm your other host, Evan Gregory.
And we're just pleased as punch that this week we're joined by, I guess you could say our boss?
No.
Is that fair, our boss?
I don't think I'm your boss. I don't think I have any... I don't have any like power over you guys at all.
No, it's definitely been established here that we are each other's bosses.
Oh, yeah.
And that makes for a very constructive dynamic between the two of us.
I work for you.
This is a classic thing for a boss to say.
Spoken like a true boss. Spoken like a true sleazy manager.
I'm a snake. I'm whispering to people behind your back. We gotta cut that show.
Oh.
But we're joined this week by Jake Hurwitz, general HeadGum guy. We didn't know he was going to be the guest this week. He showed up with a mustache on, a whole camera crew. This will be an episode of Undercover Bosses.
Yep.
You'll be seeing sometime in the next year. But he gave us raises right before this started because we were doing such a good job.
What I want to know is, as a person who is a founder and currently in charge of HeadGum, the podcast network, do people call you a HeadGum?
Oh, head of the gum.
Yeah.
The head of the gum.
Or a gum header. Or
gum
a
head.
Yeah, head gummer.
No. Nobody. I get no respect at the office. Nobody calls me the head of anything. They only call me when something breaks. No. I get no respect.
Yeah, it seems like there could be some sort of a caricature of you as a Pez dispenser or
That's
something.
Good.
I guess Pez isn't technically a gum.
But
it's gum adjacent.
It's gum adjacent. I always thought of head gum as like minty fresh breath for your brain. So I feel like that's Pez. That ties it even more into like Pez, Mentos, a mint, that kind of thing.
Dispensing empty calories.
That's right.
To gullible children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what the entire business is fabricated on. Yeah.
Welcome to the podcast.
I'd like you guys to remember that as you make your show, and especially as you do your ads,
Oh, we're gonna ad read so good, Daddy Jake. Oh, we've just learned. We didn't even really know this, that Jake, our boss or our servant, depending on how you look at it, is also our neighbor.
That's correct.
And so he's one of the few in-person guests that we've actually had. We're mostly podding on Zoom these days, as you do.
Yeah.
And so I foresee it's going to make us more giggly than usual. I'm feeling giddy to have a human guest.
This is a rare treat. I'm in a room with three people. It's pretty nice.
Yeah.
This hasn't happened.
Yeah. It smells bad and that feels good.
Yeah. Oh, God. Remember smells, guys?
I didn't until I went to see Dune in Smell-O-Vision.
Very good. You smell the spice?
Yeah. And they missed you in the face, too. God.
You got to hang on to that moisture, too.
I am really excited about today's episode. I'm not quite sure why. So I'm hoping we can talk it out so I can really put my finger on it, basically. But you suggested this song. We asked you, effectively, are there any songs that bug you in some way that like are asking for a punch up?
Mm-hmm.
And this appeared to spring from your mind immediately. You had really had this in mind. And we're talking about the song Flavor of the Week by the band American Hi-Fi. This song's about 20 years old.
Jesus, really?
It's been rattling around in your brain. This has been bothering you for a while.
It's like there's this genre of punk songs that I've always like just sort of thought about. This one is the most iconic one in my brain, but it's the idea of the guy that the girl you like is with is bad, and you're the one that she should be with because you would appreciate her more. And I used to fucking love these songs when I was in high school. And I, you know, was lonely riding around with my friends and like the girl I liked was dating somebody else. And I'd be like, yeah, she doesn't fucking she doesn't know how much I could love her.
He's such a jerk. Yeah.
So you really are. These are highly relatable to you.
They were so relatable at a time. And I think I consumed so many of them. And as I've gotten older, I was just like, oh, I was pretty undesirable. I don't know if I would have been a better boyfriend. She was like dating somebody that was like cool, popular, hot.
What's not to like about Brad?
Main drawback was my raging jealousy against her boyfriend. My second drawback was not being as cool as her boyfriend. Yeah. Those are the two things I needed
to fix. I'm the kind of guy that just sat and steamed.
She doesn't know about all the great attributes I have that are entirely internal to me.
You're in the top row of the bleachers just staring at her across the pep rally. Uh-huh. And she cheers to her high school quarterback boyfriend. Well, now this is just a video.
As he wins the game.
It's just a video.
Like, your problem is you're oblivious. I don't know.
To me, the apex of these songs really occurred even 20 years previous to this. Ooh. With Jesse's Girl.
Yes.
The most song ever about I want this other girl who's in a relationship.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
But and previously punched on this pod, Jesse's Girl.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Has been.
Now, would you say that this genre of song, I don't know if genre is the right word, this flavor of song.
Oh, yeah,
would you say that it is adjacent to Skater Boy?
Oh yeah, yeah. This is what the guy that wrote this song wished that Skater Boy was about him.
Skater Boy is like the same idea, but there's just a happy ending, right? Skater Boy is dating someone bad, but then at the end of the song,
that's right. It's the girl in Skater Boy doesn't care that Skater Boy likes her, but then in the end, Skater Boy is like on MTV, I think playing songs or skating or something,
and like ends up with Avril, right?
Yeah, and then she realizes I don't even know if they end up together. She realizes that she missed out on Skater Boy.
Mm.
Maybe they end up together. I hope they do.
That's kind of a reverse dynamic.
Yeah.
I guess where she had shunned the Skater Boy. Mm-hmm. In fact, she said, see you later, boy.
She did say, see you later, boy. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm absolutely wrong. Skater Boy has nothing to do with these songs. Totally
No,
different.
I think it weirdly does in its own way. It is all about like... The girl not knowing what she's missing. I think there's
the other archetype she's my best friend's girl. Literally is about in the title of the song. I think that's the Cars, maybe also from the 80s. So sorry, what did you have in mind like from this same era, like late 90s, early 2000s?
In Wheatus, Teenage Dirtbag, I think literally he says she doesn't know what she's missing. I love that song.
Yeah.
But it is such a funny fucking dynamic that it's just like this whole entire flavor is about a girl not noticing that this guy is actually better for her, but you're actually the kind of guy that is just screaming about you being the better guy, which makes you the worst guy.
Yes. You're describing yourself as a stalker.
Yes, exactly.
Very clearly, you've made yourself out to be a creep. She doesn't know what she's missing, which... maybe she doesn't know what she's missing because it's nothing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think that's kind of the case.
Thank you for bringing this subject to us. What can you tell us that we ought to know about American Hi-Fi?
The main thing that blew my mind about the song, I'm going to spell this out, literally spell this out for our listeners.
Great.
This is not a visual medium.
Mm-hmm.
But the title of this song, I'd never realized, is a pun.
Mm,
and
yes.
I would argue just... one of the worst puns I've ever seen. This is not Flavor of the Week, W-E-E-K, 7 days in a week.
Mm-hmm. Right, like Baskin-Robbins.
Like you go to Baskin-Robbins and there's the Flavor of the Week.
Yeah, sure.
This is Flavor of The Week. W-E-A-K. Week.
Wow.
We'll talk about this more once we spin up the song, but who is the Week person in the song? Is it the girl that he has a crush on Week for dating a loser?
Yeah.
Is it the loser Week?
The situation could be Week. It's just a Week situation.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I do think that the... I don't know. I feel like there's a chance that this guy is implying that she's Week.
Does he have the self recognizance that he's like, well, this is a pretty weak opinion of me to have. Like, I'm Week, but she is my flavor.
I feel like that could be true, except for the fact that he yells yeah right before the guitar solo, which makes me feel like he's kind of like impressed with himself.
Yeah, he's in a pop punk band, so I think there's zero chance he's talking about himself as being Week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, he loves it.
Yeah. So, I don't know. American Hi-Fi, this was a very new song to me, Jake. I'm going to go on a limb and say that when you...
You're not familiar with the song, Andrew.
I think it was probably the first time I'd ever heard this song.
I think this one's perfect for me because there's a soft spot in my heart for all of the other punk songs that are about this that I couldn't just go in on them as much. This one's almost like... It's like a safe space because the song taps into the flavor that I'm talking about, but I actually don't have any emotional connection to the song.
Yeah, I think what you're describing is that like this song feels like the sort of like clean commercial version of the ones that you like Wheatus or whatever. I think that maybe connects with the only thing I know about this band, which is that most, if not all, the guys in it are from the Berklee School of Music in Boston. Like they met in Boston, got started. And although this band made a couple of records and then they kind of went on to do other things, at least a couple of them I saw on the old wiki are now musical directors or in the band for Miley Cyrus, just like successful studio cats, like doing things for big top 40 acts and, you know, making things happen in the music industry, basically.
Wow.
And that to me is like sums up the Berklee School of Music, like a place that churns out great players. And like the only place that I'm aware of, like really focuses a music degree on pop music, not on jazz, not on classical or whatever. So we know people that play in New York, they're like from Berklee, and now they play as session musicians or Broadway or in the backing bands for touring acts or whatever. And sure enough, here's a band put together from these guys, and they got out of school. They're, I don't know, 20s
it's fucked
and
up. And it almost makes me like the song more, knowing that it was made like almost in a lab by geniuses to be like the earworm that it is.
They're like, we tapped in to the energy of Blink 182, but we're 29 and we're going to crank this tight song out.
Losers like girls that they can't get that are dating popular guys. Okay, noted. I can do that. What else do nerds like? Nintendo, they like weed. All right, great.
They have laundry.
Laundry.
Yes. We can make fun of the song all we want, but it doesn't change that the lead singer from the song is now Troy Sivan's musical director and presumably just loving it while he bounces around as a studio drummer.
I'm actually glad for him. That's a much cooler outcome than I would have. Like, if you told me to guess what these guys were up to, I would have not said that they were even doing music
anymore.
You
absolutely would have thought, like, they're playing, like, 10 state fairs this summer.
Yes.
Like, opening for another band that's playing
state
fairs.
Right, do, like, one of those, like, it's still the 90s tours or cruises where they play, like, they get, like, the opening set.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, headlined by Weezer, and these guys are playing the ballroom on Wednesday evening.
I remember I went to one of those shows once that was like the Offspring, Everclear, and Lit. And Lit had so few songs that they had to play My Own Worst Enemy twice.
Oh, no.
No one was mad about that, though.
It was awesome.
That's why they came.
Yep. I lost my shoe. It was sick.
That's how hard You Rock. Your shoe freaking flew off. I guess in the movie version, I would be afraid that the lead singer from American Hi-Fi is now working at 16 Handles and has to tell people about the flavor of the week.
Yeah, that would be that'd
until
be tough.
Finally the girl from 1999 walks in the door.
Mm-hmm. That should be their next video. This is the perfect setup for a 90s punk band video. but the lead singer, he was not even a singer previously. I mean, to think of this as like such a Berklee, like made in a mad scientist lab song, mm-hmm. he was a drummer. And basically just said to himself, like, what if I had my own band?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
Literally over the course of a couple weeks, taught himself to play guitar. Like, you know, put together a band from his friends from Berklee. And the next thing you know, you're putting out Flavor of the Week. This is their first single ever.
Yeah, you're just winning me over to their side.
Yeah, I fucking love these
guys.
Now
I'm really rooting for them. Let's get into it. The intro of the song is not characteristic of the rest of the song, and I think that's something to like about it. Here it is. Now they open with this like metal riff. Jake, sorry if you're not familiar
with
metal. I'm just gonna pause randomly in the middle. I'm just gonna be playing stuff and then pause.
Have you heard of heavy metal?
Do you know music?
Yes, Jake. We didn't ask you if you've heard of music.
We talk about things like guitars. This riff never comes back in the song. I don't think they toss off this sort of like metal sounding little bit of shredding.
Yeah, it's good. That's so far so good. No notes.
It's tasty.
Yeah, it's great.
It's tasty. And now we're about to get into the verse. No notes. So we just proceed. Sorry.
Now, one thing I'll throw out. Why is this starting with this metal sound? I don't want to get too in my head about this. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys watched the music video.
Oh yeah.
But the music video is a parody.
I did watch this.
Of a 1980s documentary about heavy metal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like this is coming out in like December 2000. You're still like on the tail end of like the
December
Supreme
2000
TRL.
Is a real fucking moment in time.
It's like pre-Napster.
Yeah.
So people are still like, how do we get on TRL?
People will buy our CD for $21.
Yeah. It's like a very much a moment where you could be thinking of the music video concept before you even decide how to assemble your super band out of your Berkeley.
Yeah, because it's all about getting on. It's all about getting it totally requested.
So maybe it's the kind of medley riff is about the heavy metal references at the beginning of the video.
I totally heard this as like these guys like grew up in the 80s and loved hair metal and like wanted to play that and loved rocking out, but knew that they needed to write a pop punk song.
Right.
To kill on the radio.
Yeah, they're paying homage.
So let me just shred for a minute because this feels good, but I'm not going to write a whole song to sound like Metallica. That's not going to move right now.
Right. How many, like, you guys are musicians. How many songs
on an
album?
How many notes are there?
86. What?
86 notes.
That's pretty solid. I was going to ask that next.
Right off the top of my head.
This song starts with the clash of the cymbal?
Yeah, the hi-hats.
Like the 1, 2, 3, 4?
Yeah.
Like you get to only use that like once, right? That's not something you can abuse because that's like such an epic way to start a song, but they can't all do that.
Yeah, it's like back in college, we had this concept when you'd play rock, paper, scissors, but you also could throw fire and water.
Oh, okay.
And the rule was water loses to everything except fire. It only beats fire. But rock, paper, or scissors would beat water. So you would never want to throw that unless you were positive that someone would throw fire. Fire beats literally everything except water. The only rule is you can only throw fire once in your life.
Once in your whole life.
On your honor.
Honor system.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's the way it makes the rule fair. Otherwise, you pretty much just play rock, paper, scissors all the time, except in very rare high-stakes situations, you have to make the guess.
Premiere of the video.
Exactly. This is the time in which we can break out our fire, which is 5, 6, 7, 8 on the hi-hats really hard.
That's good.
That's it. It's only once per album. I'll give it to you once per album.
Is it 5, 6, 7, 8, not 1, 2, 3, 4?
I prefer 1, 2, 3, 4, but I've been around like enough sets that are run by like really loudmouth dancers and choreographers, and they always count at 8.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why.
That's okay.
Everything is 5, 6, 7, 8 with these guys.
Right, but it's just 4 syllables. It could be anything.
Sure. Yeah, you would definitely say that this song is in a 4-4 meter. 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah.
Yeah.
You could also say that it's not being played by a group of choreographers.
Yes.
I will say, like, you go to a live show, how many times could you get away with the hi-hat fill or the hi-hat count in at a live show?
17 times.
17,
just,
wow.
Like, you could just time. do this kind of band, if you went to an American hi-fi concert, you just hope that they're starting every song with that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
In fact, I'm going to go back and listen to it again. I'm just going right back to the top. Let's get hype with these 4 hi-hat smashes. Oh, it's good.
So tinny.
It's good. Highly compressed on this MP3 version.
Just that open hat. Just
downloaded.
Banging on it.
Okay, here we go. Let's get into the verse, guys.
She paints her nails and she don't know. He's got her best friend on the phone.
Okay, I'm just going to pause every couplet because I'm just crazy that the first phrase is she paints her nails.
Yeah.
It's just so evocative of, like, you know when girls aren't paying attention?
Yeah. It's true. It's like demeaning right off the bat. It's not even like you're worth more than you realize, and he doesn't pay attention. It's just like you're not doing shit.
Yes, exactly.
You're spaced out. You're stupid.
Yeah. It didn't start out with you are a valued human being with a light that shines from within.
Yeah.
It also screams to me like a guy sitting down with just a pen and a paper and just thinking to himself, "What is a thing that girls do?"
I definitely just know, like, about girls.
Tapping his pencil on the paper for 5 minutes until he's like, "Wait, I've got it. They paint their nails." And we'll get to more of the things he thinks girls do later on.
Yeah. So what we've established in line two, he's got her best friend on the phone. Blammo, right out the gate, he's cheating.
Right to the premise. Is she paying your nails while he's like on the other side of the room?
Yeah, I don't understand.
That's like, definitely what I picture when, like, the first time I heard this song, I'm just picturing the whole story playing out in one room. Like, she's on the futon.
Right, but
he's just across the room with a phone that's on the wall for sure.
This, I guess, I just imagine this happened. Maybe it's because I was in high school, but like, I just imagine everyone here living with their parents.
Exactly.
Like, definitely.
They must be, right?
Writer of this song may be imagining something different. Like, literally, he could be across town at his own home, just making phone calls willy-nilly.
Yeah, I think that's got to be what's
happening. That's got to be the situation, but the way it's sung so adjacently to each other, you definitely imagine him just, like, sitting next to her on the couch, and she's zoned out that he could be cheating on her from 4 feet away.
I feel like that's what the music video is, too, right? Are they in the same room?
They probably could only play for one set day, but I don't remember.
They were all in the same space.
Yeah.
They're all in the same lot for sure.
Yes, you're right.
Same studio lot. Okay, here's the next line.
Wash her hair, his dirty
They wash their hair. That's the other thing girls do.
I see. She'll wash her hair and his dirty clothes. So what's the connection there? Just that those are the two things she washes?
Right. I guess that's it. Yeah, they're the two things she washes. And it's weird that he lives with his parents, but he's giving her his laundry.
Maybe we're wrong. Maybe this is a song together about people in their 20s that just appeal to teenagers.
Yeah.
It's a little weird to, like, bring your laundry to your girlfriend's parents' house. That'd be strange.
I'm just feeling more confused now than I was 1 minute ago. Like, why is she'll wash her hair? Why is her washing her hair mentioned at all?
Yeah. It's weird to just give. It's almost like he's trying to insult her by, like, all you do is paint your nails and wash your hair. You don't realize this guy's a dick.
So far, this is way more of a burn song about her than him.
He hasn't said any nice thing about her or him. Him, that's fine. The song's mean about him, but he also hasn't said anything nice about her.
Right. They think they're being nice to her, but they're just describing her as being only interested in grooming.
Yeah.
Like, the song is about how much you like this girl, supposedly, but you're really painting the girl to be moron.
Right.
For all this to be going on right under her nose and to be such a doormat.
Yeah. The song is about how aloof she is more than anything else.
Hey, you're a doormat. Why aren't you with me? I want you to do my laundry.
Yeah.
Okay. I think now we're getting into the pre-chorus here. I'm racing ahead because you might be able to guess what it is. There's one single word that this whole thing is building up to that I'm crazy about.
Is it flavor or weak? Flavor or weak? Which one?
You'll just wait and see, Andrew. Here's the next couplet. He's got posters on the wall of all the girls he wished she was, and he means everything to her.
Right. Yeah. So there's the duality.
We've labeled the different levels of investment in the relationship.
See, and the posters make me feel like they're high school kids. The posters on the wall.
This lyric to me is crazy because no one. He's got posters on the wall of all the girls he wished she was in this pre-chorus. I guess I'm jumping ahead. There's a second pre-chorus in which he's got pictures on the wall of all the girls he's loved before is the tweak they did in the second pre-chorus. That's coming up. So I guess this first one is plausible that it's like he has posters of, what would it be in the late 90s?
Britney Spears.
Kathy Ireland and Britney Spears something.
Christina Aguilera. But like I feel like that's a little aggressive because I think everyone did. I think everyone had posters on the walls of their celebrity crushes.
Right,
do you see that? He's going to try to cheat on you with Britney Spears, man.
Can you believe? But You could still have an intimate and fulfilling relationship.
Yeah, with a celebrity crush. Totally.
With a celebrity crush.
Yeah, and then his other thing that he says is he means everything to her, which is, you know, nice, great.
Yeah, this so far, I mean, this song is supposedly burning the boyfriend and describing this romantic crush to this girl, but instead it just comes across as like searing towards her to me. It just like makes her out to be an absolute like,
yeah. I mean, to be clear, I don't love him having a wall covered with posters of women. That, like,
just because it's messy.
We're setting him up for a life of objectification and wrong priorities about relationships. But it's wrong to say that it's unusual that this guy is an outlier.
Oh, no, I think I had a picture of Sarah Michelle Gellar on my wall.
Perfect
and a
example.
Crush on somebody in my class. And yeah. I could love them both at the same time because, you know, I didn't have a shot with Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Yeah, and she also was killing vampires.
Yeah, she was busy.
Now we're to the chorus. I hope you're ready to shred. Here
yeah.
it comes. Sorry, that was it for me. That's the word
Nintendo
that I was looking for.
What does that have to do with anything?
I'll tell you. So we got to her boyfriend. He don't know anything about her. He's too stoned. ... Nintendo.
He forgot what else he was gonna say, and he was like, "Oh fuck yeah, Nintendo!"
But what is so perfect about it is that nothing else needs to be said to understand the singer's perspective. I'm not saying he's right about it, but we now totally understand the singer's perspective on Nintendo.
Man, he must.
Which is that it sucks, and that he felt like the whole entire sentiment could be summed up in this one word sentence. Mm-hmm. Just one word exclamation. Nintendo!
He must was it for Nintendo.
For God's sake, can't you see? It's what else do I need to say? Nintendo!
He's obsessed with Mario, babe.
He must be very unpopular with his friends. Like, anytime you have him over, just trying to have a chill hang, order some pizza, drink some beers, play some Mario Kart, he's just like, Nintendo! We could be writing hip-hop punk songs!
I have to say that the music is basically perfect. It, like, it really rocks. You get to the chorus, and it's like the simplest possible move to, like, basically they just stop the guitar chords from ringing. Mm-hmm. Instead of going, you just damp the strings, and all of a sudden,
oh, man,
it rocks in a way that it didn't before.
That was the key to my heart as an adolescent.
So it's like the simplest possible thing you can do to an instrument, literally stop it from making noise. It was making noise, and I stopped the noise, and that made it rock.
But you need everyone to pay attention to the word Nintendo. So we got to stop everything.
Yes, make some space for
Nintendo!
Me insulting video games.
He says he don't know anything about her, but like so far, neither does he.
Yeah, what
he just says all he's like describing everything she does as grooming. You know, she's like, you paint your nails and you wash your hair, and he doesn't know anything about you, and I don't either. But I'd love to try.
I know so many things about you, like the things you clean.
Yeah,
I am going to throw out there. You know, we're talking about this great guitar lick. This. You know,
I'm not saying it's complicated. I'm not saying it's hard to play.
Does Stacy Jones have a leg up as a rhythm guitar player as a former drummer?
Mm.
This is a guy who's on the road.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'll buy that theory for a dollar.
With Matchbox 20, with Veruca Salt. He's drumming in the studio for Ariana Grande. Does he just have a galaxy brain rhythm guitar idea?
Wow. That's this guy's name, Stacy Jones?
Stacy Jones.
And he drums for Matchbox 20?
He's the current drummer for Matchbox 20. He's the current drummer for Matchbox 20.
I am
like a laundry list of top 40 artists.
If he needed to, he could probably call Carlos Santana.
That's awesome. Yeah. Jeez Louise.
Yeah, let's hear the riff again, Evan.
Okay, we're backing up for the riff here.
Yeah, simply impossible to think of this, the most complicated riff of all time, if you're not a Berkeley-trained drummer. It couldn't be done.
Yep. He's
That's what Rob Thomas
He came to
him.
Practice. He's like, guys, listen to me. I'm a drummer. It's not just about the notes. It's about the space between the notes. Nodding sagely.
Not my tempo.
Not my tempo.
Not my tempo.
Not my tempo.
John. John, John.
Can I lay the name of the song on you here? We've finally arrived at the title of this song.
Yeah.
It sounds like this. That's good. Let's see what. Percy.
It is up to him to make her see. Oh, there's that riff that came back.
Yeah,
right?
That turnaround just had a little bit of the flavor of the intro. You're right.
A little bit.
You're right. It did come back. Just a little twist of metal.
Mm-hmm. And it seems very clear from just the use of pronouns in this song and the way the English language works that here we're indicating that he is the weak. She is the flavor of the week. The Nintendo player is the weak.
Yes,
she's his flavor.
Yep.
Despite the fact that she has been portrayed by the singer who has a crush on her as a total doormat. Mm-hmm. What is the difference between her and him? One word: Nintendo.
Nintendo. Yeah.
She's not playing Nintendo.
She's not playing Nintendo. Yes.
No, she's too busy. Her hands are painting nails. Like they can't play.
Yeah. She's interested in important things like appearances. I hear the word weak here as, you know, not being clinical, but very much being just like California skater guy slang, or, you know, like Wayne's World type. That's lame. That's weak.
Mm-hmm.
Type descriptions. I literally don't know what that means. He's connected to the sound.
This verse oddly makes him sympathetic to me. He's like, it's Friday night, she's all alone, and he's a million miles away. He's just like, you know, he's off dreaming somewhere.
Mm.
The TV's on, and he's connected to the sound. Like, I don't know. It seems like a deep connection for him to be like.
And you're saying this is painting him as having a rich inner life.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's richly connected to the sound that sounds a little like, I'm gonna win. Let's go.
So I don't know. It felt like a little rehashy. Like basically, they're just not doing anything together.
For me, it really is just making him out as like a Nintendo addict, like a guy who cannot stop playing Nintendo.
Yeah.
And like, does this guy really have a problem? And Stacey Jones is right. Like, this guy's playing 60 hours of Mario Kart.
Or is this guy just like every other dude in high school that had like a poster of Pamela Anderson and like playing Mario Party?
Yeah.
I feel like it's the second one.
Does Stacey Jones just have a weird boomer personality where he's like, you could have been learning to play the drums and teaching yourself to play the rhythm guitar if you weren't wasting your time on that
Kids
Mario
today.
Party.
Yeah, I think that could be it.
And now we're getting to my pictures on the wall part, which is like a little more indicting, the second pre-chorus here. Yeah, he's got pictures on the wall of all the girls he's loved before. That's more like identifiably.
He definitely
weird.
Said he's got pictures on the wall of all the girls he's loved before, right? Not she.
I think that's right.
Because that would be crazy if she had the pictures on the wall.
If she had pictures on the wall of his ex-girlfriends.
Right,
then we'd really turn the worm on who's the crazy.
Hit me with it one more time.
He's got pictures on the wall. He's loved before.
Okay, but this, in a way, this still makes him feel a little sympathetic to me. He's living in his past. He's got pictures of people that he misses that he's loved before.
You're right. It could be. It's definitely two paths on this. Either he's a sentimentalist, or he's like really stalkery and just like keeping records of his little black book.
You know? That's not good.
Yeah.
To me, it sounds like he is a jerk who's just like not over his exes. But it also, like, the first pre-chorus, I like understand like the tension of it. Like, oh, maybe he's a little too attached to these celebrity crushes. This pre-chorus where like she's deciding to date this guy who just has like pictures of his ex-girlfriends up everywhere.
Nobody does that, man. And that's a huge red flag.
It's kind of like when you see one of those Reddit, like, am I the assholes? Where like where the person posts something like totally crazy. Yeah. Like, my husband locks me up in the basement for, you know, 7 days a week and only lets me out for dinner. Like, and everyone's like, well, he is the asshole, but I'm kind of worried about you because
you haven't seen it yet.
Because you were able to ignore all these crazy red flags. And this is kind of that for me.
This almost feels like there's two different guys, because the guy in the first verse is like, he's he's cheating on her. You know, he's got her best friend on the phone.
Yes.
He's like, he's out living a different life.
Good
the second
point.
Guy is like, he's sad. He's got pictures of his exes on the wall. He's connected to the sound of the TV. He's adrift. It's like, yeah, I guess you should break up with that guy too, but he sounds kind of depressed.
Yeah, this is a different guy stuck on Legend of Zelda. Yeah. The first guy is a player.
It almost feels like Stacey Jones at this point is grasping at straws, being like, no, yeah, it's got this. Yeah, he's just talking to your best friend. Okay, well, he's not doing that? Well, guess what? He has pictures of his exes. And he's playing video games all the time.
Which is a lot of red flags. If you're dating someone whose walls are covered with pictures of their exes, like, that's kind of your fault for not walking away from
them. Yeah, do not swim in these waters.
Who is the weak? You know, we've decided that the weak person is the boyfriend, but I don't know if Stacey Jones is really nailing that down.
How does Stacey Jones know that this guy, what he has on his walls? Is Stacey Jones just like spying on everybody?
Yeah, great question.
He's like going house to house.
You're unlocking something key here, I think, that we haven't yet broached. What is the evidence? And how did we get that evidence?
Yeah.
Stacey Jones has been to this guy's house.
What does he know and how does he know it?
And when did he know it?
Jake, follow the money.
Follow the money.
That's right.
Follow the money. Mm-hmm. And the answer is that Stacey Jones has paid for gas for them because they give him a ride around so often. Mm-hmm.
Right,
you know,
cool.
it's one of those situations. They're riding in the front seat, the boyfriend and the girlfriend, and Stacey Jones and all the
it's
third wheel
girl
and the fourth
situation.
Wheel and
yeah.
the fifth mm-hmm. wheel. They're just riding around in the back, occasionally paying mm-hmm. for gas.
Yeah, so they're all friends.
They all play
Nintendo together.
Yeah. Yeah, but they all kind of hate Stacey Jones because whenever they want to play Nintendo, he's like, guys,
damn it.
I told you what I think about Nintendo. This is the year 2000. Maybe he's just a PlayStation guy.
Yeah.
He's like, we could be playing GTA 1.
Right. That could be it. He might just like PlayStation. But why doesn't he like weed? It's like, you're too stoned. You're smoking reefer.
You went too
you're playing
far. Sure, we're
Tetris.
All smoking. We're all smoking and
you
playing PlayStation. You got so high, you went over to a child's platform, Nintendo.
Trying to play 1080 snowboarding, you loser.
Sing it with me.
Nintendo!
Here it comes.
Okay, here it comes.
Yeah. Okay, this is pretty great.
This is awesome. The guitar solo kills. We're punching up the song. You cannot subtract this guitar solo. It just works. I think singing it over and over, what I'm coming to terms with here is that Nintendo is actually, that's the most singable, rememberable part of the song.
Right. That's the draw.
This thing is the hook. It's not Flavor of the Week. That's the title of the song that really comes at the end of the chorus. But when you're done listening to this, what are you walking away singing? Too Stoned!
Mm-hmm. Nintendo!
Yeah, if they had titled this song Too Stoned Nintendo, this would not have peaked in the charts like in the mid-40s.
You're right, but the whole power of the song lies in that moment, just in the assonance of Stoned and Tendo. The power of that rhyme makes this song a hit.
I think this makes it appeal to a broader spectrum because it's all the guys that can't get dates, but it's also all the guys that have significant others that love Nintendo. It's a pro-Nintendo song in its own way. It's being stoned and playing Nintendo is not necessarily something that anybody's like ashamed of. It's if someone's singing that really loud, you're like, yeah, that is how I spend my
weekend. This lifestyle sounds pretty good. And that points to another thing, which is like when you think about songs or movies or whatever that are about a protagonist wanting another guy's girl, the archetype is the loser or not popular kid wanting the person who's dating the quarterback or whatever, or popular Brad, you know, look what the cat drug in. But what we've discovered in looking at this song, this song is not that. Mm-hmm. This song is about intra-clan warfare. The protagonist mm-hmm. here and the boyfriend are cut from the same cloth.
Yeah, this guy's just playing Nintendo. He's not winning the game on Friday.
I guess it could be the high school quarterback playing Nintendo just because everyone plays Nintendo, but it seems just like a normal guy.
But not on a Friday night, because Friday night's game night. And it's Friday night, she's all alone, he's a million miles away, connected to the sound.
I guarantee if Joe Boyfriend here was captain of the basketball team, that would have been in line two of the song. That's that's verse one material.
Right. All he cares about are state finals.
Yeah. you don't bury that. We've been given the most important information about this guy.
He's too strong. Practice.
He has posters.
Yeah, but you just walk away from this song not thinking, Nintendo!
Nintendo! Yeah, but they also chose the correct title for the song, like Flavor of the Week. That's a memorable title, but the way it's set up in the song structure, it comes at the end as like a wrap up. Mm. You're tying a bow on the chorus with what is it? The Flavor of the Week, sort of handing it to you on a platter. It occurred to me that that's like not the classic pop song move, which is to put the titled the song right at the front of the chorus and you're screaming it.
Mm-hmm. All about the bass, about the bass.
Because I'm all, yes, exactly right, Jake. Mm-hmm.
This guy probably played drums on that song.
But this is like what you would do if you're writing American songbook classics in the 30s and 40s. Mm-hmm. Lately I find myself out gazing at stars, hearing blah blah blah, five more lines, you get to the end of the chorus, feeling like someone in love. That's the title.
Yeah, someone in love.
The Flavor of the Week.
There it
jazz
is.
Jazz chord.
Yeah.
You think they just took one too many Cole Porter classes at Berklee School of Music? Next thing they knew, they were writing songbook style songs.
Mm-hmm, with Christmas chords at the end.
For a minute, I thought it was going to be like one of those like Blink-182 guitar solos, which I love, but which are just not really hard. You just kind of like play the same thing a little like further up on the guitar.
Yeah.
You know, where this guy's just going, and I'm like, all right, I guess that's it. And
great then, impression, yeah.
And then it breaks out. So I'm happy he went for it.
It almost sounds like a guitar solo from a different genre, which very much says to me, super band formed from Berklee College of Music, you know, with like those.
This dude could really play.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Those descending intervals.
Well, I tell you what I really love about this is like, it brings back the intro, or rather, I think you could say the intro is presaging this guitar solo, just like setting up that motif that only comes back here.
Oh,
and
that's
so it's
nice.
Really shreddy, kind of metal guitar solo that comes in over that section, and then it turns. Then it goes back to the verse progression, back to the major key, a progression of, well, I guess the chorus that they're singing over, and they continue soloing over that. So it really has two halves, the like metal part and then the pop part that the guitar goes over the whole time. It's really satisfying to get that change in the middle of it.
It's almost like a throwback to like, I don't know, like early rock and roll guitar solos for me with that little descending lick.
Yeah. I mean, the whole song's lyrics need to change in the world in which we punch this up into a much, much better song, which is inevitable and cannot be disproved in a court of law that we made it better. But one thing that we're going to have to keep is
that
sick guitar solo.
Yeah.
For sure. It's sick.
Don't touch it. Don't touch it, guys.
Yeah. Don't touch it or I will hit you with a Nintendo.
You could make the yeah into a hell yeah. Would that fit?
Okay. I see where you're going. Mm-hmm. He says right before the guitar solo, he said very emphatically, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You could say, hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
I don't know.
That's making it. I like where your head's at. You're hired on this podcast, by the way. That would make it, about 1-2%.
That's why they made me head of the gum.
Yeah. You don't get to be gum head unless you got hot, hot entrepreneurial ideas.
Sensitive chorus. Watch out.
It's just a recap. Yep.
Doesn't just work in country music, guys.
We're back here, baby.
Have we determined if he's stoned and playing Nintendo, or if he's just stoned on Nintendo?
His second verse made it seem like he was stoned on Nintendo, because he's connected to sound.
He's connected to sound. He actually got high on the video game. Guys,
I'm not sure.
Did you feel that last chord? We didn't have that chord anywhere else in the song. That A flat.
Oh, no, interesting.
It's tasty. That's a tasty choice.
Finish. Play it one more time.
That's a, Just the end of it?
Yeah, okay. Just that last chord.
Give me that A minor. A flat. Excuse me.
Yeah, okay, here you go. So the song's in the key of B flat. We've had B flat, G minor, F, E flat. Those are the four chords of every pop song. The 1-5-6-4.
But in the power pop punk, those are the only four chords.
The only ones that you will get. And so they surprised us here on the last chord. Take a listen.
She makes me weak.
Is me weak?
Is a final.
Who is the weak?
Interesting. Wow. Flavor of the week.
Why didn't he start with talking about how he likes her? He could have. Yeah. We spent the whole song talking about how she primps and how this guy is stoned, and only in the last line is he like.
How I feel.
Finally, yeah.
The entire song is a projection. Until the end, when he says, she makes me weak, which is just him being honest and vulnerable.
He was dead the whole time?
That's right. Stacey Jones.
I dare say it's a cheap vulnerability to be like, I like this girl. Mm-hmm. But it is something. At least he's given us a clue. He's revealing something.
Yeah, it's a little bit more than just describing his best friend, who he is jealous of's room, and talking about what his best friend's girlfriend looks like. And her doing laundry.
Yeah. Well, I think he also comes clean here, because we've been talking about who is the weak. Is it the situation? Is it the girl? Is it the boyfriend? But in the very end, he says, she makes me weak.
Yeah, and the huge plot twist matches with the plot twist in the...
Yeah, it's him. He's the weak one.
I mean, the funny thing about it to me, though, is that, you know, this is the only song that American Hi-Fi had that ever charted. I'll read this one sentence I found on Wikipedia, because I found this to be one of the funniest and most aspirational quotes I've ever read, written by a Wikipedia editor.
Wow.
But it wouldn't... Wait, you're saying this is not in the article?
This is in the Wikipedia article. Just some random person wrote this, some Wikipedia editor. But I just found it so funny, I wrote it down. To date, this song is their highest charting single.
To date.
To date. And I was just like, this is a true fan. Yeah,
a subtle turn of phrase.
Well, you never know.
You never know.
But just in the top 40 format.
25-year anniversary.
You know, just almost hits the top 40. And how many songs on the top 40 are played to their last note? Like, certainly, once you're halfway through the last chorus for this, you know, the DJ on whatever, like, crummy radio station is just like, all right, fade over to the Blink-182 hit. Yeah. All right, fade to such and such. And no one is getting to the twist with the A flat and him revealing that he is the one that's weak.
You're right.
People listen to this podcast, this could be the first time they ever heard that chord.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, I want to say something dumb, which is I realize that playing that one surprise chord that's a whole step below the key of the song is the exact same move that I do every time we're playing a Christmas show and you want to make it sound Christmassy, you end on like a little jazz move at the end, and you play the exact same move they did, which is like, flavor of the week, she makes me weak.
Oh yeah, that is
right.
Yeah,
so, but what Christmas. If I? That's what they did. So what if I did? You know, like,
that's a Christmas special right there.
That's super Christmassy. They're writing a holiday hit.
Maybe you cracked it. Maybe Christmas is the key to how they're living these adult/high school lives. You know, she's doing all this laundry at college, but then they're coming home for Christmas, seeing each other.
That could be.
That's exactly when the paths would cross.
You've
come back home.
And I mean, I don't want to go too deep in with this theory, but this did come out the week of Christmas, so it's like, you know, they're we've talked about this a lot, Evan, that they're like jazz. People say they hate jazz. Mm-hmm. And then the day after Thanksgiving hits.
And they mean it, yeah.
Yeah, they mean it. I'm not saying they're lying, but then the day after Thanksgiving hits, everyone wants to put on the Christmas music, and Christmas music is just full of the seventh and ninth chords that people
Everybody's
hate
a jazz the rest fan of in the December. Year.
It just, if you just think about it, that
I
Christmas
wonder if
music
Christmas
is
music
jazz.
Makes people hate jazz, because you get so sick of Christmas music by the end of Christmas.
Like, you arrive
like,
at January
this vibe yeah, anymore.
There shall be no more of this. Back to the four chord American Hi-Fi track, please.
But it's definitely like I'd be one of those people that says I don't like jazz, but I clearly do. I just don't know music.
But I love that they might be from this very first kind of cynical, pragmatist standpoint where they're like, guys, let's put together a super group and, you know, I'll learn a whole instrument I don't know how to play. But wait, the single's coming out in December. Well, good thing we're all trained jazz musicians. We'll put in one
jazz Christmas chord.
Yeah.
But they made a mistake, put it at the end of the song after all the DJs faded away.
Well, I will say, this is their only Christmas chord to date.
To date.
Oh, man.
Something else could happen, guys.
Anything can.
Okay, now, we've been quite thorough, I want to recap before we take a break.
I'm not sure how we're going to punch this up, but I 100% know that I will be looking at a list of Nintendo games that came out between September and December of the year 2000.
I love
I'm
that.
So excited.
So you're going to do, what I'm hearing
maybe
is...
Maybe PlayStation games, too.
Yeah. I'm hearing a little true crime investigation on what the video games were that would have been played by a stoned guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or what video game could have been so... You know, I mentioned GTA. Like, GTA, the original GTA was such a game changer for gamers. Mm-hmm. If you were playing GTA for the first time,
yeah,
it could really
suck you in
yep. and make you, quote unquote,
connected.
Stoned. Yeah. And if Stacey Jones is the slightly older Gen X boomer vibe guy who's just like, we used to play our music and now you're just playing GTA, he might think it's a Nintendo game.
Yeah.
That is a classic parent mistake.
Right,
like, you're playing your Nintendo
games. Right, they just call everything a Nintendo.
It's a Dreamcast, Dad.
Yeah, my parents used to call everything a computer.
Well, I'm looking forward to your investigation, Andrew. You know, little Johnny Callahan came home for Christmas break and spent the entire month playing Legend of Zelda.
This sounds like a Halloween song now.
Whoa, he's too stoned. The ghost of Tyra Banks is looking down upon him.
Is there anything you feel like we've overlooked, Jake? And I am asking you because if there is something you think we've overlooked, we could be fired.
Oh, yeah. No, I have that. I have that authority. You guys are very thorough. It's also really nice to hear like the music theory a little bit beyond this. And also like, get a recap of where these musicians are. That's an element you guys have added to this podcast. That's
Just what did they do before the song, but now you can hear what have they done since this song.
It's very interesting. I truly would have just thought this guy like worked at Subway. So it's crazy to know that he's actually just super rich.
I feel like very confident that he has spent at least one Thanksgiving with the Cyrus family.
That's awesome.
Because when you look at the list of people he has worked with, he's like toured with Miley Cyrus. He's like played studio drums for Billy Ray Cyrus. And there's a whole other Cyrus I've never even heard of that. Must be related to Miley and Billy Ray Cyrus.
Right.
That he's also musical directed for. So like, I feel like he flies to LA or just, you know, calls him up.
Yeah.
Stops over.
He stays in the Cyrus pool house when he goes to visit for sure.
Yeah. I look forward to someone writing us a livid review of this podcast, telling us the relationship between Noah and Miley Cyrus. I think we have some really great fodder. We're going to need to explore the world in which this stoned guy is playing various Nintendo games. And I think we can come up with a great version of this song. So we're going to take a break, and then we'll come back with our punch-up.
I can't wait.
Okay, we're back in. So let's talk about what we decided to look at for this punch. The key dynamics that we wanted to dissect were two things. Number one, what are the specifics of this bad boyfriend relationship? We learned a little bit.
Mm-hmm. This like unequal love triangle. It's an isosceles triangle.
It's an isosceles triangle. Yeah.
Mm, very nice.
Number one, we really felt like we needed more specifics about like, you know, what is so bad about this bad boyfriend? But also, there's a major problem, which is you get to the end of the song, and the singer is really trying to make a case for himself. I'm right here.
Yeah.
I'm a nice, nerdy rocker guy that you're overlooking, but you've made it through the whole song without complimenting yourself, setting yourself up, presenting your resume, your Tinder profile.
Mm-hmm.
There is no case for yourself. That's a major flaw.
Even if she was to leave him, why run into the arms of the lead singer of American Hi-Fi?
Are you better than my boyfriend?
Yeah.
I don't buy it.
I'd say the other issue we ran into here, Jake, is, you know, this song is basically a song from the perspective of a freshman pining after a sophomore girl who's dating maybe like a college sophomore, you know?
Wow.
And, you know, I think you've sprouted from you know, the anxious freshman who loved this song into, dare I say, someone even as cool as a college senior.
No, that's fucking, that's too much. Yeah. Wow.
I mean, you've gotten the girl, you're married, you're settled down. You know, what's your love triangle now?
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting.
So that's what we did in this punch. We really didn't make any musical changes because I just love the shreddy guitars. I did make one surprise musical change that you'll see in the middle. But otherwise, this is what we call a lyrics punch.
And we talked a long time about doing it and like, what is the nerdy guy 2022 music? Is it like a synth-driven thing? But frankly, we just wanted to sing like this guy. I was just desperate to sing in the voice from 2002. So we had to leave the music the same.
God, I'm so glad. Because I had no issue with that.
So that's what we got. I'm going to play it for you. This is about a specific relationship that is toxic.
Jake taps his mic, but he don't know. Amir's running 2 hours late. Jake's up all night, writes all their jokes. Amir's on DraftKings again, hosting Lakers Twitter threads, while he leaves all Jake's texts on red. And he means everything to Jake. Jake's best friend is so fake. He don't know.
This is so fucking cathartic. I didn't realize who I was in the song.
Jake's feeling down. Amir's voicemail is full. Jake, we won't say your home address, but we're just 2 blocks away. Plus, we're great at D&D. My true red elf rolled all 18s.
It's a love song.
Amir's charisma is a 3. Best friend, such a dork. He don't know about forks, Lakers games, LeBron James. We wish that we could make it clear. It's just the flavor of a beer.
Damn.
We're making our case, Jake, and we're not doxing you.
This is an audio medium, but the scales are falling from Jake's
This is
right
the change
now.
I made. I decided to whistle the guitar solo.
The key to my goddamn heart.
A whistle break?
Get out.
Makes it a little tastier.
Jake's best friend, he don't know anything about Jake. Cry on. We wish that we could make it clear. It's just the flavor of a beer.
My favorite line.
Yeah, he's the flavor of a beer. Did we make it weird?
You didn't. You certainly didn't. That was a fucking twist that I did not see coming. It was something I didn't know that I needed, but now that I'm sitting here, I feel that I needed it desperately more than I could have said. The song, I always thought about the song from the perspective of me being the guy singing, never about the girl folding the laundry and painting her nails. And honestly, it makes me feel different about the song because it feels fucking good to have a love song written about you.
You feel seen.
I do.
Yeah, we did make you the girlfriend.
I mean, I know it's a gamble to pit our two bosses against each other, but it's a known fact that they're best friend relationship is adversarial, and ours doesn't have to be that way.
You chose the right side, tell you,
you know,
what.
We could just be like fun, nice best friends.
Great. Let's get the beers, guys. Let's do it.
Let's go out. We're across the street from Barcade. Now, Amir was on this podcast just a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Just make sure he doesn't listen to this episode.
Right.
Just make sure that we cut off his subscription feed.
Right.
And he doesn't know about any of this.
So you can tweet at him, but just to tell him not to listen to the episode. Just remind him not to listen to it.
How long do you think it will be before he notices that you stopped texting him?
He texts me a lot and I don't always respond. So I think it would actually be a few days. A few days. And then it would be like, are you dead?
After you work on a song like this, you know, you get little snippets of it in your head. And the piece that has stuck with me since recording these vocals is just Jake's best friend, complete trash, a face we want to smash.
Yeah. God, it's so good.
I'm really cracked up just that we're living in the post-nerd world where nerds own everything.
You mean
that now Amir? Yeah, now Amir is the dork for not knowing about orcs.
Yeah.
When this song came out in 2002, you'd be a dork for knowing about orcs.
Right. No, now
but
it's cool.
Now, you know, we know we're cool because we play D&D.
He likes gambling and basketball, and that makes him a loser.
What a lame-o.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love the LeBron chain.
It was an earlier version of the bridge where it's just listing all of the players of the Lakers.
Andrew wrote a whole draft that was just listing Lakers players.
Carmelo! Westbrook!
For some reason it came out. I'm not sure why.
See, Amir would have loved that song, but this is, you put in enough orc references and D&D references.
Yeah, I deleted that.
Oh man,
that.
Is charisma being a three? What's that? Is that like a -5 to charisma checks?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I will say there's an element of this song, though, for those of you who don't play D&D in our audience, that, I mean, I don't want to scuttle our ability to become best friends, Jake, but there is a little bit of unreliable narratorship in this song because, I mean, anyone who says their druid elf rolled all 18s and has all 18s on their ability scores.
Right.
It's not possible.
Liars.
You fudge
the numbers. You're not going to be a good D&D partner and probably not a good friend.
Yeah. Wow. All 18s.
Oh, no.
But can you imagine? I feel like just somebody, you know, aspiring to that is somebody I want to be around.
Yeah. At least they know the game.
That's just rolling 3-6 every single time. My God.
That was cathartic.
It blew me away.
Thanks. This is a very targeted punch. Mm-hmm. We don't always write the song to speak directly into the life of our podcast guest, but it just felt right. So I don't know. I'll email this to you. You can play it. You put it as your alarm clock.
I'd like an MP3. I would like the lyrics, frankly. I don't know.
And
it's,
we just hope
special,
it
guys.
Enables you to stop folding Amir's laundry and, you know, stop reading all his Lakers Twitter threads.
I'm tired of being the flavor of Amir.
It's so funny when you say it.
It's a little gross, too.
It's a little gross coming out of your mouth.
For sure. God, and I feel like now that I've heard it, I want to be a fly on the wall of you guys just yelling that line in here.
You can hear our upstairs neighbor creaking around a little bit, who's a friend of ours. He's a fantastic painter who rents the upstairs studio. And we try to record our vocals when he's not in. This week I didn't come up lucky. I did not roll all 18s, and I was just screaming, "He's just the flavor of Amir!" Well, I could hear James knocking around up there, and I was like, "Good God, what does he think?"
Did you explain it to him later?
No, I haven't seen him since, and hopefully we'll never see him again.
He'll listen to this episode and totally get it.
Jake, thanks so much for coming the 2 blocks from your house here. We won't say your home address, but we could if you don't on a later episode if you don't become our best friend.
Then we will dox you.
Oh, I see. All right, cool.
Then we'll dox you. It's a threat.
It's a love song and blackmail.
It's also a threat.
Yeah, today we have presented you with the carrot. Mm-hmm. In a couple weeks, you get the stick.
I love it. Hell yeah. A firm hand.
So we'll have beers soon. Thanks so much for coming on, and we'll be back in just a few moments with your walk-in music.
Let's punch it.
Punch it!
My friends, we've come to the final segment of the show, which is called Walk-In Music, in which we imagine ourselves walking in to a song that we want to share with you. Jake, before we get into it, I just want to say thanks for being here, man. This has been a huge pleasure.
I've loved every second. I'm so amped you guys are hosting the show. We couldn't have found a better fit.
I'm having a blast, but I'm also really enjoying your perspective on pop punk of the early aughts.
Oh, thank you. I'm a connoisseur of the genre. Of the art form, I should say.
Now, while you're here in the booth, what can we be pimping or pointing people to?
Wow.
On your behalf?
I've got podcasts on HeadGum, I feel like all I care about is promoting this show. Yeah. So instead of listening to my podcast, listen to this one extra, you know? Like, wow. Subscribe, write a review if you haven't. That's what I want people to do. I'd like to promote
writing a review for the show. The generosity, the selflessness.
That's right, yeah. It all comes back to serve me in the end. So,
of course, the entrepreneur. You like podcasts so much, you put podcasts on your podcast. What's your Twitter handle?
Jake Hurwitz.
Jake Hurwitz. So we can at least point people that way.
Oh, yeah. I think of Jake Hurwitz on Twitter and Instagram, the only social media that I use. So.
Great. And you're definitely going to want to go follow him just so that you can witness all of the witty at tweets and repartee that go back and forth. Mm-hmm. Betwixt the trio of us. That's when this ep comes out
today, just as we're continuing to try to pump it up, try to get a little hype around the very episode you're already listening to. You just go look at the tweets of us trying to convince you to listen to this episode,
And then tweet at us, hey, I already listened. You didn't even have to tweet at me.
Hey, delete this tweet. So we're doing a new segment. It's called Walk-In Music, and we are all going to play a song that we would want played in like a perfect moment, a perfect scenario as you walk into an event of your choosing. Could be a WWE match while you smash someone over the head with a folding chair. It could be like a complicated revenge scenario where you're like breaking up an ex's wedding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's fun.
You know, whatever
that's
you want.
Good. That's
whatever
really
you
good.
You want to go first, Evan, or you want me to go first?
I'm happy to go first. I chose for once in my life a little known song. I've been choosing hits because sometimes they just capture the moment and everybody connects to them.
Yeah.
But this is a song that I encountered, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago on a blog about soul music back when I was like reading blogs to find music. And I don't know if this guy is even still in the game, but the artist's name is Nino Moschella, and the song is called Are You For Real? I imagine this, I picked this, it just sort of leaped into my head as I was thinking about the scenario we were describing in the ep, namely disgruntled high school love stuff. And I was just thinking of it cinematically, like I'm picturing a Pretty in Pink or a like She's All That type of, you know, mean girls, like the archetype of like a high school cafeteria. That's what I'm picturing. And I'm picturing a movie scene in which I'm eating by myself, but you can tell that I'm intriguing. There's something different about me.
Yeah.
And the camera's maybe
that kid
doing
has a
slow push. I think it might even be in slow-mo as sort of like an opening scene. And the camera's doing a slight push, very busy cafeteria.
Right.
Yet I'm kind of in my own world, you know, in my thoughts. And definitely thinking about something meaningful while this track spins up, and it's called Are You For Real?
Okay.
So this is opening
this
credits.
This is on top of all the ambient noise in the cafeteria that's slowly fading down, I'm imagining.
Yeah.
Hey, Joey, save me a seat!
I set down my fork.
Very funky.
It's a little bit funky.
If this is a TV show, 100% I think in the credits it's probably saying from the mind of Evan Gregory. Am I right?
Ooh.
It could be. You're implying there that I'm already a well-known TV showrunner. I think this could be the vehicle in which I'm being introduced because nobody knows me yet.
Okay. There's like
right now the beat has dropped and now I'm making slow eye contact with the camera. And maybe a shrug that says, like, what am I going to do about this crazy high school?
If we can get a little, like, magic realism in here, too, like, the lunch lady starts kind of, like, shaking her hips behind you, almost like she can hear the music.
Yeah, you know? That's good, because that's saying, this is Evan's world.
Yeah.
And these guys are just here to dance in it.
This is 100% the title of the show and the tagline. This is Evan's world. Everybody else is just here to dance in it.
Although the song is so good that I feel like the show might be The show might be named after the song, which would be, the show is now just called Are You For Real?
Yeah, that's a good title for the show, too.
Well, that would also be your character's catchphrase.
Yep, yep. Here's the chorus.
Really thinking about like 1990 Evan right now with his like skater haircut and his jeans jacket.
You know, a skater boy.
A picture I can pull up very vividly in my head. You know, you'll just have to imagine it, Jake. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just imagine him shrugging the camera.
Yeah, I was kind of a floppy haired alt guy there for a minute. So that's my pick, guys.
I love it.
I hope you can get down with the sauce. Let's save Jake's. Andrew, okay. I want to do yours.
Whoa.
Next. Go. Give us the intro.
I said something I have not done before, which is I picked a segment of a song, and it's the middle of a song. I usually try to pick something with a kind of strong instrumental opener. We've talked about that before.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the middle of a song, and it comes about 3 or 4 minutes into the song Divided Sky by Phish.
Oh,
Phish,
my Lord.
Very controversial band. Are they good? Are they bad?
No one knows.
Many people have opinions.
You dared to bring Phish onto the pod.
I'll just say that I tend to like have a warm spot in my heart for jam bands. But I know that I'm a bad jam band fan because I'm always like, well, the albums are better than the concerts.
Right.
Wow, guys, these concerts, let's reel it in.
My favorite Fish song is Farmhouse.
Be gone with you, heretic.
Andrew's a jam band heathen.
Yeah, my friends are like, well, have you listened to this, you know, March 17th, 1972 Grateful Dead concert? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't really want
to. 9-minute drum solo,
yeah,
man.
I'll put on American Working Man's Dead. Like, I like that album, but I don't want to listen to the shows. They're kind of bad at singing. You know, this is before Sonic Equipment had improved. So anyway, this is the middle of Divided Sky, probably my favorite segment of any Phish song, and of course, it's the album cut, not live. So if you cue it up, Evan.
Here it comes.
Got a little rolling drum Tom solo to start. Ooh, okay, so Sunrise. 2100. Whoa. The oldest man to ever attend Burning Man. Never been either. Just, you know, when you're 118, you want to do something new. And you're just like, okay, it's my first Burning Man. So, you know, the sun's coming up over the desert. Will hippies at Burning Man in the year 2100 still remember Phish and Trey Anastasio's guitar licks? Not sure.
100% yes. Yeah, he will be worshipped as a god.
Will
Burning Man
will
have to be in Seattle at this point, though.
Right. Will Burning Man still be attended by hippies, or will it be just attended by normal people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They'll be on the balmy, sun-soaked beaches of Vancouver.
The next Miami.
I just love this one segment of Divided Sky. If you even listen to the whole song Divided Sky, which is like 10 or 12 minutes long, there's parts of it that I just really don't like. But this is just one little part of it. It's just the perfect distillation of Trey's fantastic guitar tone. You have this like little shimmery organ. I'm going to start naming all the band members name, and then I'm really going to... Everyone's going to be like, this is easy!
You guys are really big Phish
fan. I'm crazy about this. I don't quite follow your story about going to Burning Man as a centenarian, although I like that detail, but what you've hit on here is that you've found a piece of Phish music that has two things. One, this is a beautiful musical motif. The way this is built over the circle of fifths with this beautiful musical sequence is a lot like, I would say, the first prelude in C at the top of the Well-Tempered Clavier by Bach. But number two, it has a
here's the best part. Okay, you can go continue. That's the best
nice.
Part.
That's
just the hint of
you're
shredding.
You're putting your steampunk goggles over your 118-year-old head at that point.
I'd say the most notable thing that this has is a distinct lack of their despicable singing.
Yeah, not a lot of singing in this part of the song.
This is beautiful, man. It's lovely.
It's great. I guess not a very good walk-in song because I'm just sitting there. The sun's rising. It's more of a... But that really speaks to how much I like this part of the song. It's more of a walk-in song for... This sunrise.
It's waking up at Burning Man.
Presumably, I died that day.
No, I do like your image of like the sunrise is hitting your face, and you might be so old that when the rays of the sun touch you, you evaporate.
Yeah, that's cool. That's it, it's like the like seven people you had like your orgy with the night before. The sun is rising, and they're realizing that you've gone to a better place.
Yeah, and they're realizing I was 118 years old. Yeah, they're like, I thought that was just part of the acid.
That wasn't a costume.
I thought that was part of the acid trip, but that was this man is 118.
I think we killed him.
Yeah, he's gone to be with the Burning Man. He like just disappeared like one of the Na'vi. Yeah.
I've got a simple song for a simple moment. It is...
This is also a song section.
This is a song section. That's correct.
I've
loved this song, I think, since high school when I discovered how much I loved the band Third Eye Blind. Mm. And I've always thought this was just a really... just like an epic moment in the song. The song basically ends. You think it's over.
The name of the song is...
This is Narcolepsy. Off Third Eye Blind's album, Third Eye Blind. They're self-titled. And I'm just like, the song basically ends, goes to silence, and then just this epic riff comes in. And I don't think I'll ever have a moment that's like epic enough to warrant this. So I think it would have to happen just as the subway doors are about to close on a crowded train.
Yeah.
I run down the steps. I jump over the last three.
Hell yes.
Slide in the door just as they're shutting and everybody hears
yes.
this riff. Cheers my coffee cup to everybody.
Oh, and everyone raises their coffee and salutes you, yeah. my friend.
It's almost like a Mentos commercial. Somebody with the newspaper has to smile and shake their head.
You're in the front car, so like the conductor looks back through the window and like points at you. He's yeah. like, I don't usually like when people do that, but you pulled it off, my friend.
That's right. Oh, that's good. Because saving the subway door is like a superhero moment, but it's also so mundane. Like everybody gets to do it a couple times a year.
Yeah, especially yeah. like, because you can make the subway, you can just miss it, and you can when you make it, you can make it in a way that's not cool. Like, you know, catching the door, fuck, like
yeah,
wrestling
kind of slamming
through
on your face.
Like,
yeah,
yeah, it gets your backpack sliding through completely untouched, like. Indiana Jones or MacGyver style.
Yeah.
That's what you want. If, that like clean.
If you do the Indiana Jones slide, then you barely made it. You feel great. Everyone is impressed, but you didn't cost any
no
man
one lost
hours.
Time. No one
yeah.
lost time.
Where if you
waiting
spend
for
that
you.
Time tugging on the door for even 5 seconds,
yeah.
there's 1,000 people on the train. You just cost humanity 5,000 yeah. seconds to save your 5 minutes.
No, yeah. that's not tough. That's not right. That's not
I
right.
still do that occasionally, but I feel bad about it.
Mm-hmm, yeah. yeah. And you have to. But that song's not going to play when that happens.
Yeah.
It's a different
yeah.
song that plays
it's
when you
gonna be
when you wrestle
trombone
the door.
You get
the
a sad trombone. You get a sad trombone. And I don't have that on the soundboard, which I didn't use this whole episode, but so I'll play something else off the soundboard.
You're the man now, dog.
that's
what the train conductor says to you.
But when you slide in real slick, instead everybody says,
"We will watch your career with great interest."
Jake, I love that you picked a snippet that is so freaking short. It's like the bumper at the top of an ad break in a sitcom.
Yeah, that is what that's what I wanted.
It really feels like a Mentos commercial.
You know, it's just like bam, ba-dum, bam, bam.
Yeah, it leaves you wanting more. It's like I could listen to him do this for 5 minutes, I think.
See, like you're a concert guy. You want to go to the concert.
But it's also the right length of time
jam band.
For like a subway reaction. This is exactly as long as people would have looked up at you, given you one single nod of, you know, sort of like the most interesting man in the world, single nod, mm-hmm. you know, and then they're just back to their phones.
Right.
That's been our show, guys. We learned a lot about American Hi-Fi and Flavor of the Week. Our beloved and delightful guest has been Jake Hurwitz at Jake Hurwitz. My name's Evan Gregor. You can find me at Get Some Evan.
I'm Andrew Gregory. You can find me online at A. Rose Gregory. And come back next week. There's going to be another one of these. We're going to be punching up another jam, and we're just going to...
Who knows what that flavor will be?
We're just going to keep doing it.
This has been Punch Up the Jam!
Let's punch it.
That was a HeadGum Original.